everybody, and welcome to a new week. Just a normal week, nothing crazy happening in the background. I'm John Iderola. Today is a Monday, and I don't know about you, but I am having a case of the Mondays. And the only thing on this planet that can maybe make me feel better is ice cream, but I don't have any. But what we do have is Francesca Fiorentini. Francesca, welcome to the show.
Better than ice cream. What's up?
How's it going?
Oh, you know, just a light pounding headache on a Monday morning. Otherwise, I'm great.
Yeah, I both Saturday morning and Sunday morning, I had really like splitting headaches, and I could not figure out why. Like Friday night and Saturday night, I stayed up late thinking about it and drinking really heavily. And I couldn't figure out why, like my weekend was ruined by these unexplainable headaches. Anyway, glad that you're here. You're rocking like bright holiday attire, and I decided to go green to match you.
I am. Well, here's hoping for another Christmas miracle. You know, last week we had Fox News' Christmas tree light. And like, look, it's like the closest to a burning bush we might ever see.
Yep.
I feel like they should take it as a sign. God is trying to tell them something. But so, you know, this is just in hopes that like a bunch of reindeer land on Fox News' roof and, you know.
Yeah, I love your point about the burning bush. If you were angry at that tree being burned, kind of you're being anti-Christian. I'm just going to put that out there. I don't feel like enough people are acknowledging that. And yeah, I just like, I kind of want another Christmas miracle. I don't know what form that would come in, like a big icicle, like piercing the roof of Tucker Carlson's Mercedes, or I don't know, Brian Kilmeade, like accidentally spilling eggnog all over himself live on air. I just need something.
Because like
Christmas
that.
Is close. Like I can feel it, but it's not quite here.
Oh, I mean, there's definitely been an awkward moment between Kilmeade and Tucker Carlson under the mistletoe at work. And it's been like, ooh, but we've always wanted to, you know, and oh, I don't know, maybe they will and be happy.
Because they'd be happier were they to do anyway. You know what we do have though for holiday cheer? After the show today, we will be doing our top 10 list, which we do every Monday for our tier 2 and tier 3 members on YouTube. We will be going over the definitive list of the top 10 Christmas movies ever. And I can't wait to see where you'll come down on some of this. We very rarely have any crossover on any of our lists. It almost never happens. I feel like it almost never happens. And
okay.
I feel like it has to happen here.
Oh, it definitely has to. It has to happen here. Yeah. I haven't seen all the Christmas movies. So I just want your viewers to know I haven't done that.
Yeah. I just make up the list. I don't necessarily have any experience with the stuff I put on the list.
Oh.
I just do it to seem cool and smart and awesome. Anyway, thank everybody for being here. We got a lot of news that we're gonna be talking about. Some of it, by the way, to start off with, is going to be very rough. So apologies for that. But we do have some fun planned. So stay tuned for that as well. We're going to run through not just natural disasters and political disasters, but little sassy political maneuvers that are kind of fun. We're gonna give you some tips for how to, and more importantly, how not to hire a hitman to kill your spouse. And so just a lot of fun, really. We're gonna try to walk you through a lot of good stuff. But if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that would be great. And with that, everybody prepare to get serious. Let's jump into this video.
This is likely to be one of the largest tornado outbreaks in our history. Jill and I pray, and I'm sincerely mean this, pray for those who've lost loved ones and for those who are uncertain of the fate of their loved ones. And the debris that you see scattered all over the hurricane's path. They lost their homes, they lost their businesses, and it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. And we still don't know how many lives are lost or the full extent of the damage. But I want to emphasize what I told all the governors. The federal government will do everything it can possibly do to help.
So those are comments just in the last day by President Joe Biden talking about the tornado swarm that has taken many lives across a number of states. And as with the president's comments there, even this morning, we still don't know exactly how many have died. It is at least 90, and that number is almost certainly going to go up because many people are still unaccounted for. And you know, we know how this works. The longer they stay unaccounted for, the less likely it is that they will be found alive. But as of right now, people have been killed in Arkansas, Illinois, Missouri, and Tennessee. Kentucky, though, had the single largest loss of life. Governor Andy Beshear of Kentucky said at least 64 confirmed deaths had happened just in that state. Again, that is likely to go up. 18 of those victims there were still unidentified, and the age of the victims ranged from just 5 months to 86 years old. Six of the victims were under 18. And you know, there was an incredible amount of loss of property as well. People died in their homes. They died in many different places. But some of the, I guess the worst single instances of death happened in factories where workers, and there's a lot of good questions about why this was the case starting to be raised. Workers were still at work, for instance, at a candle factory, the Mayfield Consumer Products. We can bring up this shot of the wreckage there. Let's see, a number of people had been working, a number ended up dying there. Thankfully, it seems like while initially over 100 people were unaccounted for, most of them have been found. The leader of that company was asked though why the factory hadn't been shut down as people were starting to fear that these tornadoes were coming. And the leader said that the company had made the best decisions under the circumstances, insisting that having employees hunker down inside the factory was safer than sending them home on the roads. Okay. Well, apparently the more than 110 workers at that company had about 20 minutes of warning. And so this isn't the only factory, the only like big place of work we're gonna talk about, Francesca, but they're gonna come up with ways to cover their asses in terms of why they didn't send people home, you know, why they weren't better prepared for damage to the actual physical infrastructure. But a lot of people lost their lives, and I think it's right for people to be wondering at this point, where the blame should be distributed.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna talk about another corporation soon, but kudos to that, you know, CEO for at least having some kind of response, albeit an insufficient one. 20 minutes on a tornado that's heading right for you, but definitely hours before for tornado warnings and tornado watches. And if you think that your factory could be in the path within miles of it, then take it off. You know, take that day off. Let workers stay at home safely. One of the things about that candle factory being leveled, and I'm glad that many of the workers have been accounted for, although I don't know how many have been accounted for with their lives, is that they were using actually inmate labor in that factory. And one of the gentlemen who was injured went to the hospital. He was like, it was like third, a burglar, kind of like three, whatever, like third degree or whatever it is where you like do it a lot. The point is that he's now free. He like walked away from the hospital and people are like, oh no, a killer is on the, no, he's not. A man whose labor was being exploited and extracted from him for probably, less than $1 an hour, because he's an inmate at a corrections facility nearby, was working at your factory. And yeah, maybe he got well and left. I don't know. I just, that story just kind of stuck with me.
We'll get to a little bit of this, but these sorts of instances can, like, they seem to always bring about, some people become incredibly selfless. There's reports of like people like bringing, like loading up trucks with food and bring it to the area and just distributing food, and restaurants are doing that too. So there's the good people, and then it's also monsters that come about as a result of this. And we'll get into a little bit of that too. But you know, I was watching video of people talking about the experience of being in that candle factory during the tornado. And you can see the footage. Maybe why don't we put up the video, by the way? So you can see a little bit of the before and after. It was just entirely leveled, and it's hardly the only building in which that happened. But You had one woman who said that a concrete wall collapsed on her and then she was able to get out. One couple with 8 kids, the woman survived, the husband did not in that case. Just devastating. And so, look, it might be, this is the initial aftermath of this. We cannot know for sure exactly when everyone knew whatever about how bad it was likely to be and why the decisions were made for some of these companies to continue to operate. But I would be mad. I would be mad to wonder why people were like in areas that are, it's not rare that tornadoes sweep through, that there wouldn't be proper protective shelters for them, that people are like crouching in bathrooms hoping to make it through this horrific tornado.
Yeah, it just quickly, it's like it's a combination of a couple things, right? A lack of respect for workers' rights, but also this is like a 1-in-100-year tornado that will continue on. Professor Michael Mann has been speaking about how actually climate change makes tornadoes worse. The combination of sort of a lot of extra humidity in the air, plus the twisties. I don't know what the twisties are, but they sound scary. But so like,
I don't know.
It will continue to happen. And this is why we need to do things like pass the Build Back Better Act. And not only that, but even more than what's being asked from President Biden, which is to help companies and factories, not Amazon, but help a lot of folks to have climate preparedness so that there is a safe place if and when there is a tornado that, yeah, might only have like a few hours or 20 minutes of warning. But hey, guess what? Thanks to some government subsidies, some funding, people don't have to die because of these extreme weather events that are becoming more and more commonplace.
Yeah, 100%. By the way, at that particular company, as of Sunday, at least, they said that 8 employees were dead and 6 were still missing. And that's considered a vast improvement from what people had thought earlier would be the case in this particular factory. And yet it's like, imagine if at your place of work, you lost 8 coworkers. You'd never, like the company would never forget about this horrendous thing that happened. And that's an improvement. And as Francesca is saying, all of these are becoming more common. It doesn't seem that there is a single way that the earth can, strike back at us. It isn't becoming worse in terms of fires and hurricanes and tornadoes and even somehow earthquakes becoming more common when it would seem as if that's impossible. Thanks to fracking, they found a way. So, in addition to the horrendous loss of life at that candle factory, many people are also focusing on the fact that an Amazon warehouse was hard hit. And at least 6 people in this Illinois warehouse did end up dying, at least as of the reports that we have right now. We have a comment about this from Stuart Applebaum, president of the Retail, Wholesale and Department Store Union, that says time and time again, Amazon puts its bottom line above the lives of its employees. Requiring workers to work through such a major tornado warning event as this was inexcusable. This is another outrageous example of the company putting profits over the health and safety of their workers, and we cannot stand for this. Amazon cannot continue to be let off the hook for putting hardworking people's lives at risk. Our union will not back down until Amazon is held accountable for these and so many more dangerous labor practices. So again, they said that they made people aware of it at some point. They had notified their employees and directed them to move to a shelter, but they're not saying when. Maybe they don't know exactly when, or maybe there were multiple warnings. But when the follow-up question is, you're saying you did this, when did you do it? And you don't answer that. And then you don't respond to a request for comment from news outlets asking about it as well. I am probably inclined to think not early enough is the answer. You didn't warn them early enough. And I saw, this is unconfirmed, it's a social media account from someone who says that they work there or at a similar location in the path of the tornado swarm, saying that they had requested to not come in, and the people that they, through their system, I forget the acronym, that they have to communicate with said, there's no known history of tornadoes in this area. We're not going to be able to give you approved time off. Which, again, unconfirmed. So just bear that in mind, Francesca. But another factory, another big loss of life. People working when arguably they should have been sent home or not had to come in the first place.
I mean, if we think it's difficult to get any customer service from Amazon, like, have you ever gotten an Amazon employee or anybody who works there on the phone to like talk to you about anything? No. It's just like calling up big tech. It's impossible. You like tweet at them, which is exactly what one employee did, tweet at the CEO, David Clark, and was like, what's up with this, right? Like, and that's exactly, that's what big tech is. They have no responsibility, not only to consumers, but especially to workers. And case in point, Amazon hasn't said how many workers were inside. We know there are at least 6 deaths, but how many people were actually working at the time that the tornado tore through that warehouse? They haven't said. They've left fire officials and others to sort of, you know, almost run their PR for them. But like, that's so on brand Amazon. Oh yeah, but if they show up late to work, oh, they know exactly where every single worker is. Don't give me that. You know exactly how many people were on the job when that tornado hit. They're just not releasing that information to us until they can get their ducks in a row and get their story straight, until Bezos comes back from, you know, wherever, whatever space station. Super. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Brian Kahn on Twitter, I apologize to the director for jumping around, but says this is the 3rd time in 6 months Amazon workers have been working in the path of deadly weather. Warehouse workers also had to go in during record smashing heat in the Pacific Northwest and the deadly Ida floods in New York City. Just like those disasters, last night's tornadoes were well forecast. Again, I don't know the individual people who would make these calls. I don't know what their stated policy is, but generally it does seem like if you could regularly err on the side of caution in wanting to protect the lives of your employees, or you'd be willing to risk it because, hey, it's not you and these are cogs in your machine, it looks like the stated record is that they are willing to play games with people's lives. And why not? They keep the machines running as long as they possibly can. And what's the worst that could happen? They lose some lives, and then Amazon is donating $1 million to a community foundation and providing relief supplies. That's nice, I guess. Is
pay
it cheaper?
Taxes.
Maybe it would be cheaper
just
to just not
your
have people
taxes.
Die. I know, exactly.
Just pay taxes, bro. That's it. And just put air conditioning in those factories. Hey, allow workers to use the elevators instead of making them use the stairs while, oh, the goods use the elevators. We all know that story. Just pay your workers well, treat them well, and pay your goddamn taxes. You don't have to donate to charity. We all know that's just a write-off for you.
100%, and it's like why don't let the people die. How about that? You can do the aid otherwise, get through without calling in workers so they're in a place where they would die, and then you try to make things look better by spending $1 million. Because it seems like loss of employee life is just, well, it's another variable we need to put into our, you know, cost analysis for the year. I don't like that. And I think that people should be able to be justifiably angry about this in a productive direction. During the break, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about an unproductive direction in this. Let's talk briefly about one individual. Rand Paul is getting some negative press attention for what's seen as massive hypocrisy when it comes to government aid for those who've been devastated by natural disasters. You can see a photo of him seemingly in real time having to respond to these sorts of concerns. But let's talk about this, because right now he's saying the Kentucky tornado victims should get federal aid. And let me just jump out in front and say they definitely should, very much so. But that said, this appears to have been a change in position for Rand Paul, because back in 2013, Paul was one of 31 Republican senators who voted against a $50.5 billion relief aid package for Hurricane Sandy after previously receiving disaster aid for their home states. Of course, these other states had already, but they didn't want to allocate the money for Hurricane Sandy. He said at the time, I would have given them $9 billion, and I would have taken the $9 billion from somewhere else. I would have taken it from foreign aid and said, you know what? We don't have money for Egypt or Pakistan this year because we have to help the Northeast. So we can maybe, I totally would have done it, but only if we take the money from something else. Because remember, for Republicans, some stuff is free. There's always gonna be money for the defense. Other stuff is, I guess like we got like a little bit of money set aside for helping someone. I don't care. Maybe it's Pakistan, maybe it's New Jersey, whatever, but pick one. You get one of those. By the way, he also voted against relief for Puerto Rico after it was hit by Hurricane Maria in 2017, as well as a bill that provided assistance for Texas after it was struck by Hurricane Harvey. In 2019, he also voted against a bill that appropriated $17.2 billion in disaster relief funding to several federal agencies. That passed with 85 senators voting in support, to give you an idea of how radical his position was on that. And so, look, I personally think all of these communities deserve the aid, but he's a little bit more picky, Francesca.
I mean, he's got some like upside down weird isolationism going on that only a libertarian has. You know, I mean, he's like against weapon sales to Saudi Arabia and agrees with Bernie Sanders on that. Good for him. But then he's like, yeah, nobody deserves any aid in a time of need. And yet he's in a time of need and needs aid. Like, and this is where I'm glad that Joe Biden is out in front talking about how this is an emergency.
Yes.
But I also would like a declared emergency. I would also like him to use this as a moment to talk about the importance of government, of federal aid, and maybe even talk about Puerto Rico and talk about the crassness with which not just Senator Rand Paul, but the former president, who he so-called doesn't think about very much, but he should, how he treated Puerto Rico in the aftermath of that disaster and the thousands of people who lost their lives, the months that they went without power. And just say like, no, we are better than that. Here's how I'm going to be better than that. Let's not forget how some in this country, how some leaders would like to treat people who deserve to survive, live with dignity, and recollect their lives and their homes.
Yeah. And I think the reason that that's a good idea is because this is not the last natural disaster we're gonna have. And what is it's looking like we're probably gonna have to have another debate about, well, you know, what if it's wildfires that hit like near LA? Well, that's a lib place, so is he gonna oppose aid there? What if Nashville, half of it collapses in a massive land sink or something? Are we gonna give them aid? How about this? How about we have a bunch of money, we're wealthy as a country, largely because we've extracted all this money from other people. So at the very least, when a disaster hits one of them, we help them, like always, everywhere. But what do I know? I'm just making a disaster political, or at least that's what Rand Paul's spokesperson says, saying Kentuckians across the Commonwealth are suffering and grieving today. This tragedy is uniting everyone around the common goal of helping and healing. Politicizing that suffering would be low for even the deepest partisan. Yet here the corporate media is trying to do exactly that. Well, hold on. You can't just claim we have a common goal of helping and healing because people in Puerto Rico needed to be helped and healed. In Houston, they needed that. In Jersey, they needed that. I have united around that goal. We've been consistent there. It is the senator who has not had a constant position on these things. And here, look, the fact that we're talking about an individual politician, to some extent, is that possibly politicizing this? Sure, but I would argue it's slightly less politicizing it than on a case by case basis, approving or denying aid based on whether it affected your state or not. That's a little bit more powerfully partisan than what we're doing right here. And I think it's a debate worth having so that people like Rand Paul won't stop future sufferers of natural disasters from not getting the aid that they desperately need.
Stop pointing out my hypocrisy. Corporate media. We're not corporate media though. So like other, many people are pointing out your hypocrisy. Sorry, like Twitter eggs are pointing out your hypocrisy, buddy.
Yeah, and we're gonna see, by the way, like he's the easiest to target for right now because he's so clearly hypocritical. But let's say that they have a big vote for aid. How many Republicans are gonna vote against that? I don't know, maybe none because it's affecting some red states, but I don't know, Rand Paul, he wasn't against aid to Texas. So sometimes they're willing to screw over even other Republicans. After all, it's government money. They don't want it going to regular people. That's what unites them, whether they're old school neocons, establishment, corporate Republicans, or whatever a libertarian is supposed to be these days. They all think that money needs to go back to the same billionaires. Anyway. We're gonna take our first break. When we come back, the ridiculous video from Donald Trump and Mark Meadows is in a little bit of a bad way. We'll give you the details after this. You're supposed to be like launching me into a happy week, not filling me with like rage. rage and blood. Anyway, I don't wanna, that's as much as I can take. But with that, let's jump into some very different news, Francesca. Let's take a look at this video.
I have nothing to hide. I wasn't involved in that. And if you look at my words and what I said in the speech, they were extremely calming, actually. But I would think that the Democrats would like to see it. And I think secretly they would like to see it upheld. Well, we're going to have to see what happens. If you look at the protest, it was a protest. The insurrection took place on November 3rd, which was Election Day. This was a protest, and a lot of innocent people are being hurt. A lot of innocent people are being injured.
So that was Donald Trump, I think, responding to the fact that some of his claims of executive privilege are not being upheld. Him saying that the Democrats secretly hope that it would be, maybe. They both love the expansion of executive power, I suppose. But the bigger point was, he's not at all worried about what he said on January 6th because his speech was very calming. Mm-hmm. Francesca.
Yeah, it was like.
He has a unique ability to just say the dumbest thing you could possibly say, the most untrue thing. He will come up with it.
Okay, first of all, can I just say when I saw this and I read this, I immediately laughed because Donald Trump is actually funny. Like, and it's like he, whether or not he means to be, it's funny because he's so blatantly rubbing all of our faces in his lies. Yeah. That it's like, oh God, you just said the complete opposite of that entire day. Extremely calming. It was like ASMR for Nazis, you know. It was like whispering Mein Kampf from start to finish. That's how I fall asleep, you know. And then I have a civil war in my dreams. And guess what? The South wins. Like that's what it was. Like he said, he was like, we have to fight. We have to fight. I just started watching. Yeah. Okay. I was just going to say, I just started watching the 6 hours at the Capitol, 4 hours at the Capitol, however many hours, too many hours at the Capitol from HBO. And it's just very funny because, you know, the whole, the like, oh, it was Antifa that did the bad stuff. Like the whole opening half an hour is just a bunch of like Oath Keepers and militia people and Proud Boys yelling F Antifa. Like that's their latest chant is F Antifa.
You kind of have a point about, it's not, we need words with a little bit more granularity. It's not funny, but it's almost like we get hit by a lot of chaotic news. Mm-hmm. And I would say that after the past few years, when someone says Trump's speech incited violence, him turning around saying it was very calming is almost like, okay, good. Okay, things are going as they're supposed to. It right. wasn't calming, but he's of course gonna say that it was. Why? Because someone said it was inciting violence. Like he's gonna say the exact opposite of what. So it's almost like the pattern is holding. The crazy pattern is at least playing out as it's supposed to.
How do you break character? I mean, as Laura Ingraham, how do you not break and start laughing? Like I watched for a laugh, nothing, just so serious. But like, if I were pretending to be a Fox News anchor, which most of them are, and I had most of my monologues written by other people, I would laugh. I would just, because we all know that it was not calming.
This is the job. This is the job. Yeah. It is never acknowledging an inconvenient reality. And that's all it is. Like they never have to, like Tucker, I was talking about the pre-show. Tucker Carlson has been talking about January 6th all year. He has never had to actually show the violence or answer for it.
Like you just don't have yourself.
To do
that.
You can do whatever you want.
How do you train yourself to believe your lies to that degree? I think you don't flush the toilet when you go number two. You stand over it and let it waft into your nostrils. And then you sort of swallow, you open air, you open mouth, breathe in your own doo-doo to the point when that doo-doo comes out of your mouth every day, you don't even. It's just like fresh air. It's just as real as fresh air.
I just picture. I'm prepared now. Anyway, I don't know. I think that the less funny answer is none of this is real to them or matters. It is all just a game. It is a front. They make money back here and they need to do all of this to keep it going on. That's what it is. Like that's not true for us. Like, so it kind of feels wrong to us to treat all of this stuff, which is incredibly consequential, that shallowly. But that said, they're hardly the only ones whose approach to politics is like that. And it ain't just on the right. The difference is that we have to actually engage sometimes when our movement is wrong or some people aren't what they say they are. On the right, it's just they never have to acknowledge an inconvenient fact. And it's amazing how that works out. Anyway, I want to just read a couple of little excerpts from the speech because, you know, fact checks or whatever. I like cultural artifacts like fact checks. By the way, the day before his speech, if you'd asked him, hey, Donald, I know you're going to be giving a speech. What kind of speech is it going to be? How many words would he have to say before he hit calming as a description of the speech he intended to give? Like 500,000? That might literally be the first time he's ever said the word calming.
Agreed.
But anyway, his calming speech included such gems as, and we fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved. Our country has had enough. We will not take it anymore. And that's what this is all about. We will stop the steal. We want to be so respectful of everybody, including bad people. And we're going to have to fight much harder because you'll never take your country back with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong. So we're going to walk down Pennsylvania Avenue calmly. I love Pennsylvania Avenue. It's so calm. And we're going to go to the calm capital and we're going to try and give the Democrats are hopeless. They never vote for anything. They're just so calm. Not even one vote, but we're going to try and give our Republicans the weak ones because the strong ones don't need any of our help. They're strong and calm. We're going to try and give them the kind of pride and calm boldness that they need to take back our country. So let's walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. Now everyone take a nap.
I mean, we've all gotten a massage to that, right? Like that's what they put on. Like what would you like to hear? Sort of Eastern wind sounds or Trump's speech from January 6th?
Look how calm. Some people I hear were even going number two on the ground. That can happen when you're so relaxed, so calm, it just slips out. You don't even know. So calm. It's just so stupid. And Laura Ingraham, who like Francesca, we're dumb dolphins on the internet. She's a serious, respected news person. And she just listens to him say that. And just moves on. That's it.
Dolphins are not dumb. And right, you're canceled.
Mocking the Zoom guy.
Canceled.
Exactly. I'm mocking the Zoom CEO or the better.com guy. Anyway, just stupid. Okay, we'll move on. Why doesn't anything have to make sense, Francesca? It did, right? At one point, like you've been in this fight for a long time. Didn't you used to have to like pretend to be telling the truth back in the day?
What?
A little? No?
No. Okay. Oh. I've always told the truth.
No. Not you. What? I mean, like just in general. I don't know.
Here's my big problem with this. I only want this to be addressed on a level, like a presidential level. Like I do feel like Biden should be saying more about this. I do feel like he should be reminding us about January 6th more often. And I don't think we should be relying just on news media. I'm happy we're covering it. I always get annoyed when like mainstream outlets cover it, because I'm like, you guys should be talking about strikes and, you know, pretty awesome other things happening around the country and income inequality, et cetera. But I am annoyed that like on an official level, there isn't a response to this trash. Because that's the only way that you can actually ride. Like most people, if Biden kicked up a little bit of dust, if he wasn't so afraid of kicking up a little bit of dust, I do think that could break through the Fox News stranglehold of not having any critique of Trump. Because they would be like, oh my God, what did Biden just say about you? Ew. And they would like the drama, but let's give it to him.
They're terrified of seeming to be being partisan. But the thing is, like if you just watch Fox News, you think the Biden administration has been doing everything they can to go after literally every, not just Trump administration official, but like red hat wearer in the country anyway, even though Biden has been like running from any discussion of any of this.
Yes. So he's been victimizing Kyle Rittenhouse.
No. Anyway, with that, let's move on to another awesome individual. The January 6th commission might actually charge Mark Meadows with contempt. He is admittedly quite contemptible, but he has said that he's not going to work with him anymore after previously implying that he would. So they're looking into that. And in advance of that, they have to give a little bit of an explanation about why they need to talk to him, what sort of information he might have. So they put out this 51-page report. And it includes 6,600 pages of records taken from personal email accounts and about 2,000 text messages. These people really are just constantly communicating with each other. That is more than you should generate in your entire life. But let's give you an idea of some of what might be in those that we would want to know a little bit more about. So let's see. They have an email he's alleged to have sent on January 5th about the security of Trump supporters who would hit the streets the next day. The recipient of the email is not identified. But what we do know is that Mr. Meadows sent an email to an individual about the events of January 6th and said that the National Guard would be present to, quote, protect pro-Trump people, and that many more would be available on standby.
Wow.
So that doesn't necessarily mean they would be there to participate in an overthrow of the government, but it definitely is looking at that through a partisan lens. What's the devil's advocate for that? That he thought that those peaceful Trump protesters would be attacked by mobs of Antifa, and so they'd need the National Guard to save them from Francesca and her rabid followers?
Mm-hmm.
What is the argument there?
Look out, Brantifa coming. Mm-hmm. No, there is no argument. That's another way of saying they're gonna stand down and they won't be around. They're gonna pretty much let you run roughshod, and they did. That is chilling, because it's not just, I mean, because we were all like, where was the National Guard? Why weren't they called out? I don't know, maybe they were deliberately told to stand down.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, if the chief of staff the day before was in communication about what the plan was for the National Guard, it certainly seems even more unacceptable that they were so slow to actually deploy them. But that said, we have more information. Meadows, quote, received text messages and emails regarding apparent efforts to encourage Republican legislators in certain states to send alternate slates of electors to Congress, a plan which one member of Congress acknowledged was highly controversial, and to which Mr. Meadows responded, I love it. So that plan, if you don't remember the details of this, was we have the actual electors, which are chosen as a result of the way we do our elections. And they decided, no, that sucks. We're just gonna choose other chuckleheads that'll say Trump won. And the chief of staff to the president of the United States the day before the insurrection said, I love it. Additionally, he exchanged text messages with and provided guidance to an organizer of the rally. So that's fun. The organizer told him that things have gotten crazy and I desperately need some direction. Maybe he got some. The committee report says that Meadows got text messages from a quote media personality who told Meadows to tell Trump he had to issue a statement telling his people to leave the Capitol peacefully. So far as I know, that media personality has never come forward saying that they were desperately trying to get through to Trump through the chief of staff that he has to put out a statement. So who is that? I don't know, maybe eventually we'll find out. And then finally, another text, according to the footnotes of the report, captured even the confusion with the direct quotes. It read that Meadows sent to one of by one of the president's family members, indicating that Mr. Meadows is, quote, pushing hard for a statement from President Trump to, quote, condemn this, I'll say ish. So the family member had been communicating with Mark Meadows, and Mark Meadows implied he was pushing Donald Trump, but Donald Trump didn't readily do it, so that also looks bad for him. Anyway, the end of this, I think, should be clearly they need to hold him in contempt. They need to force his cooperation, because more than perhaps anyone else, he clearly knew a lot of what was going on. And it was Ivanka, right?
Bro, yeah, it was Ivanka and media personality, maybe Hannity, I don't know. I don't think it was Carlson, but I'm very curious as to who broke first. Who's not committing? It was Geraldo. That's why they ignored it. Just like he gets ignored on that station. But this is a guy who's trying to put out a book, who is releasing a book and wants everyone to buy it on, you know, at the Hudson News on their way to visit their family for Christmas. We're not buying your stupid book, okay? Just release. I'll buy your book if it's all the text messages that you have sent in that period of time. I'll buy the book that has all your emails. This is some salacious stuff right here. And it also shows that, like, you know, we've been floored by revelations, but not really, that rioters met with people like Representative Boebert or Representative Green, Matt Gaetz, et cetera. But like, it went all the way up. It's Mark Meadows, it's chief of staff, dude. This is a guy who's not only essentially coordinating with the National Guard to basically stand aside, but then saying, yeah, we're gonna do this alternative plan for alternate electors in some universe where we think this works. No, there's no universe. You didn't actually have a plan, and guess what happened? You sicked a mob on the Capitol. That's what happened.
That is what happened. Okay, we'll see if we find out more. That said, we do have to take our second break. Lots more to get to though, so don't go anywhere. The sort of day where the hour is just getting away from me, and so I can only imagine how angry the production team is getting. So sorry about that. Let's jump directly into this, and we're gonna talk briefly about this, okay? Okay, and then we'll fit in two things in this hour. We'll see. Okay, let's do it. We all knew that it was coming after Texas decided that they came up with this novel mechanism for evading oversight from the SCOTUS to effectively outlaw all abortion by setting up a bounty hunting system. Well, what's good for the Christian radical is good for the Californiaite. I don't know. But Gavin Newsom put out this: if states can shield their laws from review by federal courts, then California will use that authority to help protect lives. We will work to create the ability for private citizens to sue anyone who manufactures, distributes, or sells an assault weapon or ghost gun kit or parts in California. And he said, I am outraged by yesterday's US Supreme Court decision allowing Texas's ban on most abortion services to remain in place and largely endorsing their scheme to insulate its law from the fundamental protections of Roe v. Wade. So yeah, they're just gonna do the same thing, but for guns, letting everyone just sue gun manufacturers. But hey, it's not us, it's not the state judiciary or the executive branch. So there's nothing wrong with this, right, Francesca?
I mean, it's a cool clap back. I get it. I'd like to see it actually happen. It feels more performative than something he'll actually get done, Gavin Newsom, other than what he could do single-handedly, which is just ban fracking, stop oil exploration off of California and in the shale gas exploration. Just do stuff single-handedly. Rent control, let's do that on a statewide level. So I get, you know, Newsom is just again a Democrat who sort of, maybe almost to his credit, in a way that Joe Biden does not, uses the political moment and conversation to try and score points against the right and their reticence to pass any kind of gun control. So on that, on a rhetorical level, I give him some points. But when it comes to concretely doing something about gun control, I mean, he has tried, right? And he's been blocked. And of course, if this even goes through, it will be blocked by higher courts, including the Supreme Court, because they're complete hypocrites.
Exactly. Well, yeah, and I want to point out a friend of the show, Ellie Mistal, says, I mean, I get this, but if you think that the SCOTUS is bound by its own logic and is unable to issue two completely conflicting opinions bathed in their own hypocrisy, you just haven't been paying attention. Totally. Like, okay, yeah, it's a clever thing to do, and I agree. He seems to get how to generate a little bit of a national conversation better than Biden. Unfortunately, Gavin Newsom, based on everything that I've seen, is hardly more interested in actual substantive change, like using that ability to control the moment for the good of the people. Maybe a little bit more than Biden, maybe. But yeah, they could totally let this stand for abortion and knock it down for every, you know, quote unquote liberal goal. They could totally do that. But anyway, a clever move by Gavin Newsom. We'll see if it lasts for a little while. Oh, and by the way, let me just, if it's not already clear, I don't want this for either of these. I want some of these guns to be outlawed, but this is not the way to do it. Not like this, I would say, to quote an amazing character from a movie.
But I will say, last thing on this really quick, that we are entering a moment where gun manufacturers are being held accountable, and there are a couple of cases working their way through courts. But basically, it seems like gun manufacturers can be sued now for by the parents of victims or family members of victims of gun violence, which I think is a step in the right direction. Because again, it's intractable. We cannot get any progress on this issue. So, I mean, I say, yeah, sue them out of existence, or at least try and do a little bit of financial damage. You know, even if it is more, again, more performative, fine, do it. Some accountability is better than no accountability.
Great. Okay, with that, let's jump to something terrible. You might recall that Joe Manchin, among the many things that he wanted to strip out of the Build Back Better bill, one of them was increased accessibility to dental health care for people who desperately need it. And what's interesting about that is it turns out that in West Virginia, a quarter of people 65 and older have no natural teeth left due to decay or gum disease. That is the highest rate of any state in the country. It's crazy that like it could be that bad. 1 in 4 senior citizens having no teeth. The fact that it's as bad as it is in other states too. All of this is a national embarrassment. You can see in this chart tooth loss being mapped. Like West Virginia certainly stands out, but there's a few states on there where it is not good at all. They could desperately need this. 300,000 West Virginia Medicare recipients would have gained dental benefits under the bill, but he's not interested in it. He's got teeth and a yacht, so he doesn't care if you don't have either of those things. But anyway, look, people are not gonna be shocked, Francesca, to find out that the people who supposedly represent us don't have our best interests at heart when it comes to our healthcare. But this feels especially petty, considering that it wouldn't be that expensive and it would be such an improvement to quality of life for so many people.
I mean, he's just afraid he can't keep on buying people off with applesauce. He's just like, you know, well, what am I gonna do? That's how we get them in the door. That's how we vote as they're on their way to the polling station, just a little cup of Mott's. And you know, you've bought off your entire electorate. This is why I think it's so ridiculous that Democrats lose, at least better Democrats, because Manchin is a Democrat, of course, I guess. He's the Democrat we deserve. Okay, I'm done. But the point is like you could straight up go in and go up against Joe Manchin and be like, your teeth. I believe in you being able to have teeth. I believe in you being able to chew your food and eat the food you wanna eat and not have to suck things down in straws, you know, or like go bankrupt to get teeth. Like that, it's so simple, it's so basic, it's about basic needs. And yet no one, obviously the right is not talking about those things, but also Democrats aren't really talking about those things. Cause why? Oh, that would require, you know, standing up a little bit to big pharma and the healthcare lobby.
Yep.
And we know they don't do that, but—
Yeah, you can stand up to a progressive, but not to a corporate Democrat, come on.
Terrifying.
Yeah, we're gonna make a shirt, it's just gonna be Solid Food 2024. That's what we support. Anyway, look, far more, I guess, like this issue is obviously huge. It's not just West Virginia, it's senior citizens all over, but it's also just people who intersect with the system at all. We wanted to let you know a little bit about last Friday, this House panel released a report on Big Pharma, on some of the stuff that they've done that have resulted in worse outcomes for people. You're gonna be familiar with some of these, but just to sum up, drug companies aggressively raise prices to meet revenue targets, and executive compensation structures create incentives to raise prices. It's like the most obvious thing in the world. And it's basically just saying we live in an out of control capitalist society, but I love that they put it there. Drug companies target the US markets for higher prices and use the Medicare program to boost revenue. Drug companies use strategies to suppress competition and maintain monopoly pricing. Drug companies use patient assistance programs as a public relations tool to boost sales, and research and manufacturing costs do not justify price increases. All of that is true, all of that is bad. It doesn't seem like they've identified one of the big issues though, Francesca, which is drug companies buy us. Us, the people putting together this report, certainly our colleagues, they buy us, so we won't stop them from doing all of these things. Any quick comments?
I mean, again, this is a bipartisan issue, and Republicans who have a little bit of spine have spoken out on this, especially on a statewide level, I know, and they've tried workarounds. But I guess once you get up into, you know, the Senate or even the House, nope, you're completely bought and sold also by the drug industry. So there's a consensus here, but yeah, we need at least allow us to buy drugs from Canada or Mexico, but they won't even do that.
And their owners don't want that. Okay, buddy, thank you for joining us for our first hour. We do have more news coming for you. If you're on Twitch or on YouTube, don't go anywhere. We're gonna take a couple minute break, but we're back with some more fun after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.